The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Users lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Yon, what's up? My name is Colin Moriarty. I'm senior editor of IGN. We're here for a very special kind of video version podcast beyond special edition, you might call it, Craig?
I'd probably shorten it down a bit.
To what?
The Last of Us spoiler cast.
Yes, very
ladies
good.
And gentlemen, if you haven't beaten The Last of Us, what are you doing with your life, number one? Number two, turn off this video. We're going to finally talk about everything and not hold back.
Yeah.
Wait, we are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
you didn't even beat it yet.
I did.
He's only playing Survivor multiplayer.
That's what I've been doing lately.
Yeah.
But so far, everyone in the office that's played it's really enjoyed the game. I gave it a 10. Obviously, a lot of other people gave it a 10. It's a masterpiece, I think we might call it. And we're going to talk, obviously, as Greg said, about the game's story. We'll go in depth into different plot points, kind of discuss what we thought about the game. So again, shut the video off if you haven't played or beaten the game yet. Or maybe if you don't care about spoilers, you haven't played the game, you still want to watch with us.
Mm-hmm. You're missing out, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Idiot.
Play it. So, Greg, let's start with you because you're so good looking.
Hey.
How'd you guys like that?
Thanks.
Chop liver.
Yeah.
Good job on that diet, Brian. It really paid off.
So where should we start? Should we start from the beginning? Or
no.
Should we start about at the end?
I say you start at the end. It's the one thing we haven't been able to talk about.
Yeah.
That's like the
funny
thing. Well,
we haven't
thing.
Been able to talk about the beginning either.
Good point.
Let's start at the end.
The end, yeah. I was taken aback by that ending. I did not expect the ending to be... I finished the game... And all I was texting people from Naughty Dog, calling people from Naughty Dog, and every time they'd answer, I'd just start saying, I can't believe I'm the bad guy. I turned out to be the bad guy of this story. And they're like, not really. I'm like, fuck what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm the bad guy. Joel turns into the bad guy
in
this game. I couldn't believe it.
He's one of the most despicable video game heroes you will ever play. I can't think of anybody who I have,
as
much as I enjoyed him, I can't think of anybody in a game I have liked less.
Well, yes and no. And I think that was the sort of moral ambiguity of the way it ended, was it was sort of like, would you save this one girl to have this one girl, or would you sacrifice her for the off chance that she could save everyone else?
There's no off chance about it, though. When you're making the collectibles, they're very clear that this is it. It's working. I can't believe we finally found her.
But they don't know that until they rip her brain out of her
skull. No, the notes all say that this is true. That this is what's happening.
So Greg and I and Goldfarb, who's not here right now, went out with a guy from Naughty Dog. We had dinner with him or whatever. And I explained to him, he told me I was wrong about my interpretation. But my interpretation was that they didn't know that this was going to work. And that, like, you find video or voice recorders as you explore the hospital at the end or whatever. And it sounded to me like not specifically like they found a person who's immune to it, but they've been experimenting on people for a while.
Yes.
And that, like, and I kind of gave Joel, now I'm not saying Joel's a good person necessarily, but I'm saying that it gave Joel a way out. Like, it was like...
I love that I told you this isn't true, and then Naughty Dog tells you it's not true. You're like, well, this is my interpretation.
Well,
there's no way out. He's told in black and white, she's finally the answer. We know she's the answer. And he says, no, my needs are more important than that.
They
there's
can't
no
know
greater
that.
Good.
See, this is the thing, is that they can't know that. She's immune, right? Like, as far as we know, for a year's worth of time, she was bitten, and she didn't turn. And usually the infected...
Right, that we're certain of.
Right. But like...
And, we're also... He's a man, she is a female.
Well,
they are the last of them.
I'm saying that like she could turn at some other point in the future, and that like the cordyceps is in her brain, and we know like it's acting as it usually would, but it's except it's not affecting her motor skills and
in no part was I like, oh man, it's been 2 years. She could still turn at any moment.
I'm keeping my eye on you.
Yeah, like, you know, you sleep, but you're always like, wait a minute. You never know. You could turn. Because to me, that was pretty rock solid. Like, she's not turning. She was immune to the virus. That's the way that works.
I want to go back to this when there's inevitably a sequel to this game, because I bet you that certainly could be one of the plot points, is that she does eventually
really?
Turn.
Really? Yeah. I don't think so at all.
What I thought was interesting, and I was hoping they'd touch on in some way, shape, or form in the entire journey, everybody see 28 weeks later?
No. Yes.
Remember, like, those kids, even though, and that woman, even though they were immune to the virus, they were still contagious.
Yes.
So, like, if they kiss somebody, they infected them. And not even, like,
Ellie
a crazy...
Ellie does that, right? Like, when she bites David, she tells him, you're infected.
Right.
Talking about? And they don't dwell on it. They do a really, really good job of, like, taking... Mm-hmm. Trusting you to understand what they're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do want to say, like, you know, you can, like, you know, it's fiction, you interpret it the way you want to interpret it. People interpret books in ways that they're not meant to be interpreted all the time. And so, like, my interpretation of the end of The Last of Us was, like, that there was a moral conundrum with, obviously, Joel having to weigh this decision to take Ellie away from the Fireflies, in which they might find a cure, because there's no guarantee that they're going to find a cure. There's no guarantee. They have her on a surgical table. They're definitely going to be able to get a cure from her because mm-hmm. she's immune to it. Like, there's no guarantee.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I didn't get that, like, he picked up a couple micro-recorders, and they were like, I hope this works. And it's like, oh, yeah, we solved it. Until they peeled her head open and cut her brain out, and we're like, oh, yeah, it did it. They wouldn't know. There's no way of knowing until she's dead. Here, he didn't want to take that chance because he's a selfish prick.
Putting that whole thread away, like, when they're making the walk up, he asks her if she's up for this or whatever, and she's like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, they don't have the dead solid conversation of, what if this kills you? What if you have to give your life for this? What, blah, blah, blah. Well, but she says she's going forward with this.
Yeah, well, it's because that never comes up as a concept, right? Like, Joel.
You'd think it would.
Joel is sucker punched into when he finds out, like, what you're
going
to
kill her.
He
says, like, oh, you know, they're probably going to take some blood. That's what he says. He's like, oh, they're going to take some blood. It'll be fine. She's like, I've been pricked before. That's what she says. She doesn't go, I've had my brain removed from my head before.
Right. But what I was kind of hoping too is that you'd steal her away and kill all these people. And on the drive home, she's like, what happened? And like, oh no, it didn't work. And she's like, I told them to do this to me. Like, what? Couldn't there have been a conversation? Like, the problem, this is one of the weird parts of the ending with the story, I think, is that all of a sudden when we're playing as Joel, the Fireflies turn this corner and are evil. Everyone in the hospital is evil. They're going to kill you. They're going to kill her without letting you talk to her. It seems like we could have had one scene where Joel goes and says, has a conversation with Ellie.
Well, yeah,
is this what you want?
It kind of reminded me of
that. And then it's like, it's fucking on right now, rather than it's just like, kill everybody.
But I loved that they didn't do that, because in reality, like, this isn't necessarily your story and your relationship with Ellie. This is Joel's relationship and Joel's story.
Yeah.
And he's making the executive decision that they're wrong. Whether or not they are, like,
yes,
he's making
the
call.
But you get to make some of those decisions yourself. Like, when I kicked in that door and there was three doctors sitting there, like, oh God, I was like, you die! And I shot one right in the head. Because me, I was like, don't you hurt that girl! And I shot him in the head. And he was like, oh, I just work here.
That whole part is actually, I thought, a great analogy to how the clickers and the runners work, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that they talked about at the debut that, you know, their humanity is still in there, and that's why they're like this, because they're trying to fight the infection that's inside of them and f***ing with them. And so, like, when I do that, I was like, where's the option? Where's the choice? I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And so, like, I was like, I'm waiting for something to happen, and the doctor comes at me with a scalpel, like, no! And I'm like, well, now I gotta kill everybody.
Yeah.
I didn't kill the other two. One.
Yeah, I only killed
no witnesses.
The first guy who happened to me in that door, I was like, you're dead.
Yeah, there wasn't any witnesses. You
killed, like, 40 people on the way up to that room.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Quite a few witnesses. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, my whole interpretation of it was yeah, like, you know, she could be the cure. They got to work on it. You know, we're talking about a post-apocalyptic society where, like, a lot of technology is gone. Like, a lot of the knowledge and know-how, frankly, is gone. Like, these guys...
It's not that bad. You just hit triangle on the generator three times.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and it's all good. It's just like, you know, I don't think they went into it too much, but, like, to say, like, that Ellie... they are guaranteed to get a cure because Ellie is immune is ridiculous. And that's why I think that Joel's like, this isn't something that's certain. They have been... The Fireflies have had this hospital in Salt Lake City for a long time. Like, they might not have found someone that was immune, but they've probably been experimenting on other people. It kind of gave him a way out. I'm not saying he's a good person. I'm not saying he made the right choice for humanity, but it gave him himself a little bit of humanity.
Well, I mean, for me too, putting that whole threat aside, he cements himself as a bad guy when he lies to Ellie at the end.
I mean, he cements himself way before that. But
for
yes.
me, that's like that's the Anakin to Vader moment.
Yeah.
Of like, all right, I've done all this. For you, I've done all this horrible stuff, but whatever. And then you get there and you lie to the one person you're trying to save.
Not only do you, but she was like, now here's your chance. Was all of that true?
Exactly.
And you're like, yep, all true. I'm a liar.
Let's go play in the dam.
And because of that, like, I feel like Ellie...
But no swimming.
To some degree, Ellie is complicit in the lie. I feel like she is... She trusts Joel, but at the same time suspects that he's kind of not being entirely open with her about it. So she gives him that opportunity to say, like, I trust you. And whatever you say
is what
I'm
going
to believe.
It's like being in a relationship. It's like that's all you have. Is if you look at this person that you trust and you're like, if there's anything else you want to tell me, now's the time. Yeah. Like, no, everything's fine.
Yep. Totally.
And then she's not complicit in that. She's just, it's literally, that's the only thing she has is this guy.
Yep.
That's it. That and the off chance that she'll see a giraffe.
So
beautiful,
like,
moment again.
So
I really was.
I cried like a baby.
Me too. Really?
Yeah, that was the moment that broke me, was the giraffes.
Wow. I started tearing up 20 minutes before the ending, so when I busted in and shot that doctor, I was like, oh, dear, man! I actually had tears rolling down my face.
And by the way, before we jump away or whatever, there's also that really pivotal scene where, you know, there's a lot of cut scenes in the game where you see people die and Joel's sometimes killing him, and he does what I didn't think he was going to do to at least set it up for a more straightforward sequel, as he kills Marlene.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's such a great move.
And mm-hmm. yeah, and
no,
she,
you'll just tell somebody.
Not how I thought that scene was going to go down.
It was awesome in its brutality. Naughty Dog didn't shy away from like showing you these kinds of things, and it did cement Joel as being like very selfish. But he's doing it for this girl. Like when I was playing it and beating it, you know, I was like, I'm not mad at Joel. Like, I actually don't dislike Joel because he made the righteous choice for him, and you can kind of understand where he's coming from because he's been on this adventure with this girl who, by the way, saved his life. Was in like quite a predicament with David, which we'll get into, you know, a little later and stuff like that. But I think that the contrast with how the game starts, where you really see a more normal pre-apocalyptic humanity of Joel walking into his house in the beginning of the game. He's on the phone. He's trying to get, a new job. He might be a contractor or something like that, a construction worker of some sort. He's worrying about bills and stuff like that. His daughter Sarah is laying on the couch. And what I really liked about it was that it sets up, it's a very direct and obvious allusion to his relationship
what is
with
to come,
Ellie.
Yeah.
It wasn't like abstract at all. And that's what I really enjoyed about it. So what did you think about the way the game opened? Which I think is this game's young Drake moment.
You talk about that a lot from, you know, Uncharted 3, if you're not catching up, if you didn't play Uncharted 3, you suck. But in Uncharted 3, we thought we knew a lot about the game, but when we started playing it, like, Chapter 2 jumps to Drake as a kid, and we're like, holy, I didn't see this coming. Yeah. It was the same way, like, we had talked about it coming up, we weren't sure how much of the world before we'd get to see, and I kind of expected it to be one rolling montage cutscene of people running and that fire, and, like, that was kind of the outbreak, but to get to play from that perspective as his daughter for, you know what I mean, he had to do all these different things and see... I thought it was brilliant, and it really caught me off guard, and I liked setting up the world that way beforehand.
The way they handle it, too, is really great, because you open and you play as Sarah, and you're walking around the house, and you are this defenseless child. You obviously have nothing to worry about, but it's a little eerie, and you know what's coming if you know anything about this game.
If you've looked at the box art...
Yeah, you get the idea
you
that
can
some
guess
shit's about to go down.
That this girl will be dead within 5 minutes.
Yeah, so you're walking around, and you have the monsters in the closet moment of, like, what's going on in here? And it's fine, you go downstairs, the monster's there. And then when the tables turn and you play as Joel, you're similarly defenseless, because you have to carry her. And it's just, I thought that was like a really interesting setup to give you two completely powerless people who care about each other right off the bat and to have one of them be taken away.
Yeah, and the polish in the beginning I think is really cool too, because when you take control of Sarah after, well, first of all, Sarah gives him the watch. And the watch is really cool because I kept looking at it throughout the game. Like, it's still there.
So does he. There are moments where he will just have his arms crossed and just look down, and you know that it's like, dang, you're thinking about that kid.
It's all fucked up, and I didn't make this connection until later, but at one point, Ellie says, like, your watch is broken or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's another allusion back to a joke that Sarah, like, an undeveloped joke that Sarah and Joel had with each other, because he thinks, he's like, the watch is broken in the beginning, and he tricks her. It must have been something that was developed in their relationship long before we got to know them or whatever, so that was kind of another... cue in with like his daughter and then like his new daughter. Basically.
But it cuts deep with him, right? Because like she says it to be kind of a bitch because she doesn't like him at that time. Like Ellie is saying that in a really catty way, like your watch is broken. Like sort out your life. Your stuff is broken. And it's like that sucks for Joel because you know he's thinking back to that moment that we're thinking of.
Yeah, for sure. And then I loved exploring the house in the beginning too. Like you see the birthday card she forgot to give him. You walk into the bathroom, you see a newspaper that's kind of talking about this spreading virus at the time. They don't know about it. The one thing I really love the most, I think, is like when you walk into Joel's bedroom and the TV's on and you're watching the newscast and an explosion happens, and then the explosion happens at the same time
out the
window.
Yeah,
like,
that was so cool.
Yeah, like little
so
things
cool.
like that are really cool. And you run down the stairs and the cop cars are going right by.
Your phone's going off. You missed the call from Tommy.
Tommy's blowing
the
up.
The game had
the phone.
A few moments like that too, where you're sort of like following along this window, and you can't see through it until you're actually. in the right spot, like with the scene, we'll get to it, but the scene with the giraffes was almost sort of similar, where they're like, hey, come look at this. And you're running around, and you're like, I can't, it's all fogged out, and there's a crack in the window, and finally it opens up and you see everything. And the same thing happened with the house, where it's telling you the story in these like slivers. And you're like, you get a tiny glimpse of it. There's an explosion out the window. There's something on the news. The news gets cut off. A cop car goes by. You hear a crash. You hear a dog barking outside. And then it stops. And you're like, what's going on? And then the neighbor busts in. And you're like, okay, it's fucked up. Yeah, I should have read that paper on the toilet a little bit.
it's really odd. Like, the whole scene where the neighbor busts in is really cool, too. Yep. Because it's obviously your first sign of the infected. Specifically, he's a runner. And I don't think anyone at that point would be a clicker yet. Yeah. And that's immediately when Joel starts to lose his humanity. And even though we get to see him 2 decades later, and that's a huge jump from like the events when he lost his daughter. That's an exorbitant amount of time.
Which is great, because that means they don't do what most movies and stuff do, where the first thing that happens where it's like 20 years later, he's like moping about his daughter. Somebody brings it up because we just saw it as the viewer, right? It's like, no, it's like life goes on. He's not necessarily over it, but some shit has happened. He has other things to worry about. And he is just in a new phase.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't realize until the one scene in the school where you see the banner that's like, prom 2013, and it's all hanging. I was like, oh, shit, it's 2033, and 20 years has passed since this year, which I was kind of thrown off because half the people in the house has had nice TVs, but half of them had those really fat ones.
You'd be surprised how many people still have fat TVs. Yeah, well, it sucks. I just saw one thrown away on the street today. I'm like, what year is it?
That's a guy that was making the right decision.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to the future, pal.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, so obviously at that point, we are, like Mitch had alluded to, we were running through the street. We're with Tommy, Joel's brother, in some sort of Jeep. It's cool, you get the controller and see, kind of look around and see what's going on. You pass a couple with their kid on the street. They don't stop to help them. You see, like, one of their friend's farms burning down. There's an accident, obviously, in town. Then they're running around. We get to this really cool part where I actually experimented with it a little bit, and you can die in these parts.
I noticed that on my second. I started my second playthrough, and I was like, you know, I've spent in the back seat of the car. I was looking to the left in the back. Now I'm going to look to the right in the back in the front. And you can start moving around. And yeah, if you sort of like dilly dally a little bit, you get torn up. Like bad things happen to you in those first few minutes. And I guess the first time I played, I just ran from point A to point B and got through it. But if you're just like, hey, what's that? It's like, oh.
Yeah, it happened to me too. Specifically when I was running towards where the soldier is that kills Sarah. I like, you can hear the guy behind you, and you're really not meant to see him. If you turn around to look at him, he gets you. So like,
yeah.
I had to turn around and look at him. Mm-hmm. So we get to this scene with the reluctant soldier. Tommy comes and saves the day, but it's too late for Sarah. She's shot and killed.
Yeah.
And then on that wonderful and uplifting note, the game proper, I would say, begins.
Right.
At which point we're fast forwarded to Boston 20 years later, and one of what we find out is one of the very few remaining quarantine zones that are functioning. We see quarantine zones later in the game that have been overrun.
Yeah. Did you try to f*** with the military police?
Yeah, they push you down.
They push you down. They're like, I will kill you if you do that again. I was like, will you? And he pushed me down, and he f***ing popped me in the face, and I died. And it's like, there's no game here yet. Like, you're walking in the road, and that guy's like, I will kill you. Back down. And he will.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, like, this is where we meet Tess. I think Tess is really one of the coolest characters.
One of my favorites.
In the game. So what do you guys make of Tess and their relationship?
I just love that Tess was as strong, if not stronger, than Joel. Like, she was way tougher than him. She clearly had, like, a better lay of the land. She was very much in control of whatever their business was. Like, she in the beginning, like, she just comes back from finishing a job because Joel was being lazy or whatever.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you say that 20 years later you don't catch up with Joel and he's like, oh, man, my daughter. But he's clearly just checked out in many ways.
Like, he did not want to go out. He was
and
still...
And Tess is like, we got to go do this stuff. And he's like, I guess, but my daughter's still dead.
Yep.
And he's f***ed up about it. But or I love, about something.
He has, like, the alcoholic mentality, right? Where he's like, oh, I'm so sad. I don't want to do anything or whatever. And you, like, he behaves that way. But I love that there's a perfect nod to that in the beginning where Tess is like, do you want one? And she pulls out the whiskey and he goes, no, I don't want one. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. But he's behaving in a similar fashion to an alcoholic who would be, like, drinking his sorrows away.
Now, were they
if
couple,
I was
couple?
Him, I'd be like, yes, please. Yes. That's one of 10 left on Earth.
Were they a couple, or were they just a work couple?
They used to be a couple, for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, they were definitely together at some point.
Yeah, I went back and forth on how I felt about what they were doing at the moment.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if they were, like, still a thing or whatever, but they were, like, there definitely
there's
was
been
a romantic relationship
penetration
at some point.
Jesus. Yeah, I agree. I think that they probably were in a relationship at one point, or maybe still were, and we just don't get... I mean, this world is very different.
Yeah.
The way they act is very different. They also have a business relationship that... is not just like a convenience for them, like they need to make it work, and so they probably don't let their personal relationship get involved in that kind of
sure.
stuff. They're dealing with things like ration cards, arms, and ammunition. So,
at least they, I mean, the quarantine zone, it doesn't seem like that's I doubt their relationship, personal and romantic-wise, was anything like Tommy and his wife, right?
That never, where they were like married and before
they,
God. Because
they were out, yeah, they were out on their own, doing their own thing, having this community, where here it's a very structured, you know, like 1984 kind of thing with Big Brother I was watching. I bet it was always more just like, they're both lonely, pretty much.
Sure.
One of those things.
Yeah, Tommy and his wife had enough freedom to bicker like a real married couple.
Right. Like, that's how you know you're free.
Yeah. Where they're just like, oh, f*** it, you take the horse. Nah, I don't want it. And they're yelling at each other. Like, there's no one like, don't do that with a gun in their
hand. The other cool thing I think about Boston that we see that's kind of subdued, there's two things I think that are really interesting. One is that Joel has a lot of respect for from everyone in that town. Like, they respect him. And it's probably because he's getting them things they need without the military knowing. The way they talk to him. I don't know if you got to the point where if you actually go up to a guy like you don't have to have this conversation, he starts to talk shit to you, and one of the guys is like, "Are you fucking crazy?" Like, that's Joel.
I didn't see that. That's awesome.
And yeah, it's like in the corner by like before you go out the gate, and the guy apologizes to you or whatever. And there's another part, and just looking at the cityscape, it's clear that the Fireflies had infiltrated that city at one point, and that there was a fight there because there's their tags and spray paint are everywhere.
There was a fight everywhere in that game. There was nowhere in that game where it just like got
this
old.
Is pristine.
Yeah, like it wasn't like close the door on this one. No one's ever going in there. Everywhere was destroyed. Like there wasn't a single part of the game where it wasn't someone like, I really hate that poster, and they ripped it down.
No, I'm not
Let's
saying.
Let's drive
that.
A car through this. Like everything was burned at one point.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the quarantine everywhere. Zone still exists, right? The Fedra, the remains of the federal government, are still holding Boston. They're not holding a lot of other places, but they didn't hold it in perpetuity. Like, there was, at one time, the Fireflies that occupy the city. And I thought that was kind of cool. And that story was just told by the spray paint on the walls, which I thought was really neat. And then the Fireflies basically have some sort of terrorist attack outside.
I really like that, too, because every video game does that now, right? Where they put stupid hokey messages on the... Yeah, they just spray paint all over the walls. And in The Last of Us, I actually stopped to read it because it wasn't just like, beware! It was like, oh shit, something specifically bad happened.
Well,
here.
And you get a lot of that if you're going through the homes and you're like, not only rummaging through their shit, but paying attention to the spaces around you. Like, there's a lot that shows you, like, oh man, like, this space was lived in, and this is the way they took out of their home. Like, you can see where, like, this is where they gave up packing their shit.
And that's what I really appreciated about the game was, and we talked about, like, meandering and how some of us spent more time kind of, like, roaming around and others didn't. And the game wasn't always completely direct. There's no button, like, in, Bioshock or whatever. You hit it, and there's a
big arrow
on the floor. That never happens in the game. You don't know where to go next most times. Yeah. So it's just up to you to kind of just be like, I guess over there looks okay. So if you figure out the path straight through, good for you. But if you don't, like, there is detail everywhere. You walk into people's houses and you're like, this was a kid's bedroom.
Yeah.
Something horrible happened here.
And a lot of the time, like, characters will address the situation around you. Like, there's a point where you're with Sam and Henry and Ellie, and you walk outside, there's a swing set in the backyard, and they talk about it. Like, Ellie and Sam are like, what is this?
Yeah.
And they just, like, they start pointing and talking about different things that they don't understand, or they address, like, oh, there was, like, dogs here or something. Like, they address the fact that you are in a place. They
the
don't
environmental
just...
storytelling is what's so spectacular in the game, I think. I mean, on top of everything else. But when you are walking through and, like, you find clothes everywhere. And you asked me before we started if I cried during the game, right? And I got choked up twice. The first time being with Sarah in the very beginning, and the second time when I was exploring a house and I found a little boy's journal. And I'm reading through all the entries, and it's as the outbreak's happening, and it's getting worse and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
And then the second to last journal entry is that the dad drove him and his dog to the edge of town, and they released the dog into the woods.
Yeah.
And he's like, and then they're driving away, and the dad's like, you know, he wants to be wild. This is how he wants it. And I, like, it never happened before. I paused the game and hugged Portillo, my dog, who was next to me, because it was just like one of those, like,
Portillo wants to be wild too, Greg.
It was one of those moments of just like how f***ed up it had gotten. You know what I mean? Like, obviously there's monsters outside and this, that, and the other, but like they have to have these kind of decisions.
That's what I loved about the game too. There were pockets of that everywhere. Like, there's the story over here on the beach of the guy that was like, I'm going to spend as much time on the water as I can. I have to turn around.
There's Ishmael.
And there's like, hey, we're going to start a school in a sewer.
See, and like that...
That'll be safe.
That was what was so awesome about Ish's story, is that the fact that all of that connected to it, and it led you from his boat into the sewer and then out into the world again.
Yeah.
And there was just like, wow.
Yeah,
like,
I love that thread. The other cool thread that it's not a thread, it's just a very specific thing that happened. I'm not sure where it was. I think it was in Pittsburgh. Was you walk into a house and someone spray painted Rachel on the wall. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's just an arrow down.
Yeah.
And it has like
it's a note.
Yeah, it's like a note to her, and Ellie, in one of the many contextual conversations they have, is like, I wonder if they ever found each other.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's just really cool that they are constantly commenting on the things they find. It's not just like this thing that's like immersive where it's like, I'm going to find a piece of intel so I can get a trophy.
Right.
It's like,
Ish's story when they leave the sewer and there's a sign outside that says, don't go in
there. Yeah, on the other side.
It's like, you hell. Guy. And she's like, come on. Couldn't have said that on the way in.
It's awesome. So,
quick prediction. Do you think, we know that DLC's coming for single player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think it might be Ish's story?
I don't know.
They went through so much to set it up.
Yeah, I really hope so.
And then, now, granted, the narrative's told. I already know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I hope not. I would like to see more of what happened before Joel.
I have a conspiracy theory about what that DLC is, because there was a ton of concept art for San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yeah, I remember that.
They also prototyped or worked on a bunch of stuff with a dog ally. So I'm wondering if, like, you play somebody...
Then they heard Call of Duty was doing that. Yeah. Damn it!
So I'm curious if, like, there is going to be remnants of the dog companion in the DLC, if it's going to be San Francisco, if it'll be somewhere,
remnants,
like,
of the dog? Like, pieces,
like,
of,
yeah,
them?
Like the leg?
Fungus dog!
My lucky dog leg. Let's survive the apocalypse.
Because we saw, like, the East Coast coming through Central America, the middle of the states.
Yeah.
But we didn't see any West Coast stuff, so I would kind of like to see another part of the country.
Yeah, the San Francisco art that you're specifically talking about was, like, one of the first pieces of art we ever saw from the game, and that was what led us to believe that some part of the game would take place in San Francisco.
Yeah, which obviously did
not
happen.
You say you want to see stuff.
I see what you're saying. It could be from Colorado down, like a boom through San Francisco to Utah.
Exactly.
Did they imply that this is happening all over the world?
It wasn't really clear.
It must be. I mean, it's similar to... I hate to use this reference because we always refer to it, but it reminds me of Jericho in the sense that, like, the rest of the world is functioning during Jericho, and, like, they're there because they're constantly, like, trying to communicate with you with, drops and, like, trying to give you generators and food and stuff like that. You assume that because something like this is airborne and with spores or whatever, that the entire world is essentially infected.
See, because I don't want to see stuff leading up. I read your review, and there was a part in it where you said... you're sort of just dropped in. You don't hear all the backstory coming up to this, and that's great for that. And I think that was really cool of them to not be like, in 1885, and it's black and white,
and it's spelling it all out for you.
And it's like, 12 people died, and someone, and you're just like, no, I found a newspaper in the bathroom, my daughter died, 20 years passed, fuck it, let's do this. I like that. I don't want DLC to tell me, it's like, I didn't need episode 1 for Star Wars. Like, I don't need DLC for all that stuff. I think just like, drop me in right where it was. Keep it going. Tell me other stories happening around the time, around the country, you know, or around the world. But I don't need to know 10 years ago if someone's like, are you itchy? I don't know. Blah.
Yeah, I mean, this is where the reference, and I think some people that read the book got it, and other people, you know, didn't get it because they didn't read the book. But this is really an analog for Cormac McCarthy's The Road.
Right.
And specifically the fact that they never say what happened. In the movie of The Road, I've heard, I didn't watch the movie. I was a fan of the book or whatever, but that they kind of refer that it was like kind of a natural disaster that happened and like ruined the world. But in the book, they really don't say anything.
They just say the world is ash and that's it.
Yeah, like the world is f***ed and it's over and this is the story of a man and his son. You know, and like that is basically the way they go into The Last of Us, except for that little scene in the beginning with Sarah. And then you're just like, this is a story of a man and this girl.
Right, and there was more similarities to the Road was there was the whole basically head-on fact that there are cannibals now. And The Road did it, like, they're like, come on over, we're having dinner. And they're
you
like, oh,
baby.
What's in that monster closet down there? And all these naked people are like, girls out of here. And they did it in The Last of Us where it was just, this guy was just like chopping up parts. And he's like, what are you doing with that? Nothing. And it's like, Ellie, you hungry? What's that, deer? Are you sure? Yeah, I guess I'll eat that. And then there's
he
like
promised.
Five, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. And then there's like five naked people hanging upside down in the butcher's thing. And it's like, oh, they are eating them. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, it showed that whole, that desperation side of things. It always gets to that. That there's like, these bad things happen, then it's like, how fast does humanity either A, start killing each other, B, start raping each other, or C, start eating each other? And two out of three of those things either happened or were heavily implied. And the rape thing, you and I actually talked about the other day, on one of our many lunch talks about rape.
Lunch dates.
is that they never really kind of, until the very end of the game where they're like, she's going to get, you're going to bring her out there, she's going to get raped or murdered or whatever. They never actually imply that that could happen to somebody or to Ellie specifically. And when she's pinned down in that, you know, Elks Lodge or whatever, and it's burning down, that restaurant. I sort of was just like, oh, this is implied. He's going to rape her. But it's never.
Well, not even that he's going to, but just that he could, right? Like, because it's like, here's this man overpowering this little girl. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that is uncomfortable enough. He doesn't have to say, like, I'm going to rape you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the other part, you know, because that is like the. It is like the unspoken underlying, like, one of the reasons you protect Ellie is because these people are f***ing crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and the first thing that happens in that game is Tess gets jumped and has to defend herself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whether that's because she's a woman or because she's this business person with weapons.
Right. And like, the first part you see it is not even with David. It's like when you are basically driving through Pittsburgh and they trap you. It's one of the scenes you see in one of the cutscenes they showed long before the game came out. And the car crashes over, and that guy has his is grabbing Ellie. Like, he goes for Ellie first.
Yeah.
And like has his hands all over and stuff. And like, that's like oh, we gotta protect Ellie. It's like really one of the things that, you know, it's so much more important for you almost to protect her in those kinds of scenes, because you know she can take care of herself in straight up combat, because she proves it time and time again. I mean, she proves it when she stabs the Fedra guy in the leg and they end up killing those soldiers. When they're almost captured or whatever. So there's like something, the unspoken like danger that Ellie has to go through just as a woman in this world, I think, is like really one of the most palpable and unspoken things.
I know there was a lot of talked about the whole like you will protect her line with Lara and Tomb Raider and stuff like that. And for, you know, justifiably, she was a grown woman with weapons, like to protect her. But in The Last of Us, you really do feel that because A, she's a young girl, and B, because there's men out there. And as men, we know men are monsters. And, like, in the apocalypse, they're even worse. They're just, like, the... I would, like, if I saw a wolf in the wild in that game, I wasn't worried. But I saw some guy, like, I was like, oh, I'm going to fucking kill everything about you.
Yeah, kill or be killed. And that's one of the... Yeah, like, that whole mantra is one of the things that Ellie and Joel conflict about when Ellie basically saves, you know, Joel's life, and Joel refuses to even acknowledge it until, you know, later on when he's like, it was me or him. And that is basically the whole underlying message, I think, in the entire game is, like, Joel is a murderer, much like Drake is a murderer in the Uncharted games, but that's like a comedic, almost action movie. Like, this is serious. Like, that's what I said in the review was, every human body, rather, has weight to it when you're killing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, you don't really feel bad about killing the infected, even though you know
they're human. Well, no one in Uncharted ever goes, please, 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 don't kill me, man, please. That never happens.
Yeah.
But this happens all the time in The Last of Us.
You're going to execute somebody, you feel, and you can justified. See their eyes widen.
You feel justified.
And they go like this, and then they like shrivel back, and like, oh my God. But then you give it a minute, and they're like, I'm going to fucking shake.
Exactly.
I got to kill you right now. Like,
when Joel, you know, stabs the dude in the kneecap, he marks the map, and then he walks over, and he's like, he told you what you want. He's like, I know, and I believe him. And it was like an applaud moment for me of like, yes, this guy, we're on a mission. But then you jump ahead to where I'm like, why am I the bad guy?
It's hard to say enjoyed, but that's what I really sort of got most from The Last of Us was that it gave me this grimy, dirty feeling like no game ever had. Whereas desperate and you're crawling around and scrounging for scraps to put together to kill people to survive, to make it 5 more feet in the snow, in the rain, in the sleet, like just to make it another second. And it took me a few hours to really realize that that's what the game was about. Because it's not just run around and kill people. It's like you, every single thing you do counts. And it's all weighing on you. And the world is gritty and disgusting. And it's gross and horrible and morose. And you're just like, oh, this is what they want me to feel. They want me to feel like really just defined by how dirty of a human being I've become. Because
everything
of
about it is meant to make you feel bad.
Yes.
It's, you're hitting on a good point there of like, it's, you know, designed to make you feel something and, you know, define that character a certain way. Even though I was like, I can't believe Joel's the bad guy at the end of this. I didn't feel betrayed by the character. I didn't feel like this isn't, I wasn't like Mass Effect, like, where's my real ending, Naughty Dog? You know what I mean? Like, I was like, everything makes sense. It's a weird thing of like, I feel like playing this game was more like reading an awesome book than any other game I have. In a game, you expect a happy ending and your character to come out on top or something else, and you know, sometimes it's weird when in the end. This one was totally like, this was their narrative and this was their vision and this was their thing.
And I loved it for that.
Yeah, exactly.
I loved them for not copping out and going like, do you want to go left or right? And everyone was like, did you get the good or the bad ending?
Yeah. Right.
Like, no, we created a narrative for you and you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, we all got the bad ending.
On Up at Noon, you know, Neil and Bruce were on during E3 and they were talking about that. You know, this ending was a horrible focus test. Nobody liked it. Other designers on the team came up to them and were like, we need to change this ending. And they're like, no, we're like, well, this is what we are and this is what we're doing. And that's crazy.
it's interesting to me that you say Joel's the bad guy because he is, but in that world, he's like the 10th worst guy.
he could be like,
at least I didn't f***ing eat anybody.
Exactly. And we touched on David and like, you know, when Ellie kills him, she gets up and she hugs Joel and says, he was gonna, and he's like, I know, and she never finishes that. And a bunch of people tweeted me and like, did that mean rape? Like, I didn't feel that way, blah, blah, blah. But I got to talk to Nolan North when he was in for Up at Noon, and if IGN's working, this video is up on Friday. The Nolan North interview is up on Thursday, and you can watch it yourself. But talking to him, I hadn't played the game yet.
Right.
And so, and I was like, tell me about this character, David. He's like, you know, David isn't a bad guy. He doesn't think he's a bad guy. He's out to protect his group. And Nolan North's like, and when he tried to rape Ellie, it was because, you know, he's trying to, she's can't be infected and this, that, and the other, and blah, blah. Like, he had justifications for where he was coming at, the character.
Right.
But Nolan North talking about it, I thought I was going to get some real heavy as far as, like, there'd be, like, weird things going on that it was pretty clear this is going to be rape. And whereas at the end, they leave it up to your, like, your mind, like your own worst conclusion. Like,
and
where were you going to draw?
The thing with David is, like, you meet him and you're cautious, obviously. You know, and Ellie's like, I don't know what. And what by your, I mean Ellie or you.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you're playing as her for the first time, and you're just sort of like, oh, I'm doing everything Joel was doing, but smaller. and you meet him, and you're like, something's off. But then you guys fight together and you make it through.
He has a gun he ever pulled on you and you're protecting each other.
He tells his friend to go off and get the antibiotics.
Yeah,
and you're
all
right. But part of you is always, like, everything in this game, you're always waiting for that other shoe to drop.
Right. Well, they've drilled the paranoia into you so aggressively the whole time that you can't help it. Like, even if you wanted to trust him, and he was totally trustable, if he wasn't a cannibal psychopath, you would still be thinking, like, something.
And it was, you know, just like The Road, spoilers for The Road, but towards the end of...
The Road is like 10 years old, so...
but towards the end of it, you know, the father dies, the kid's on his own, and he sees a family of people walking down the street, and he's like, I guess I'll join them. And they're like, come on, just come with us, it's safe. And he doesn't know if he's going to have an apple in his mouth,
yeah, and you
and
don't
dead
even,
and eaten an hour
yeah,
later,
and you don't
or
even really
he's
know.
Got a new dad.
That's like, the beauty of that book, too, is you don't really know what happens to him.
Yeah. And well, in the book, he doesn't even see the family, he's just like, and he takes off, and he just walks away, alone.
And, like, well, the interesting thing is that, you know, where this diverges from The Road specifically is that The Road has this really, like, really interesting part in the middle of the book where they find that bunker full of, like, food and clothes and, like, a shower and beds and stuff like that. It's, like, one of those things where, it's like, Cormac McCarthy's like, here's a little bit of a reprieve for you for, like, 20 pages.
They're enjoying
and you can
shower
just chill out
the
and then get the
time.
F*** back out into the apocalypse.
The kids got so
now, The Last of Us had that, but it was with giraffes.
Yeah, and
that was the one moment where it was like, you know, we're not in a bunker full of food because pressing X to eat for 3 hours would have been boring.
Yeah.
But you're walking along, and it's right after, it was really
it's
cool
right after the David stuff.
It's like the 40th time in the game where you're like, come on, I'll boost you up. And Joel puts his hands out, and no one shows up. And he's like, Ellie, what's going
Everything
on?
About that scene is masterful.
And
right?
he looks like, over, and she's not there. And it's just like, you know, this repetitive nature of gameplay all of a sudden just ends. It's hit X to jump up. You don't have to do that. You look around, and she's gone. And you're like, you're right? And she's like, what? Yeah, because it's obviously she's catching up to everything that happened.
Yeah,
her.
she's still whole David thing left such a thumbprint on her. Taking
you boost
killing.
Her up, and then she runs away, and she's like, oh my God. And you're like, what? And you scramble up as fast as you can, and you're running along to catch a glimpse. You're chasing her down this hallway, and everything opens up, and there's you sit at the side of a giraffe, and then you see one. And it's this very Jurassic Park moment where it's just like,
it's
we've been running
head.
From monsters for so long, but now we can pet it.
Yeah.
So you
see, that's what broke me. Like, that is when I, like, just playing it, I was like, oh, shit, suddenly I'm crying, and I didn't realize it. Because what's happened is you've come off such this incredible low of Ellie just, like, obliterating this dude's face with a machete.
Yeah.
And you start the next scene in spring, where you're on the highway, and she's just staring straight ahead at this painting or this mural of a deer. And you're like, shit, like, she's thinking back to winter. Because that's where it all started, was over a deer. And the entire time on the lead up to the draft, she's despondent. She's not paying attention to you. Something's clearly up. Joel, for the first time in the game, is like being really nice and friendly and like kind of jovial. And you're like, who is this guy? Like, their roles have shifted. And to finally go up there and see something that is just beautiful and joyous. Well,
what
and
I loved about that was
broke
it like
me.
It was a reminder that the world is not destroyed, just humanity.
Humanity.
Is. And it's just society is in crumbled ruin, but giraffes are like, oh,
we're giraffes.
We weren't here for that.
We own this.
That's fine.
It's our city now.
I think I probably.
But then
I did get
a little worried because you see like five giraffes walk off in one direction, and then right over here is that the world's scariest monster tunnel in the whole game, where there's just like bloaters and 85. They're like and giraffes are just like, oh, we're just gonna cut through here. It'll be fun. Oh my God! But you don't know if like I don't know if the infected are eating animals in that game. Like maybe they are. Like there's stuff with the dogs. There's the monkeys you see for a few minutes.
I thought
it was gonna be a whole thing.
Yeah,
where it's like crazy psycho infected.
Yeah,
monkeys.
I was really relieved actually when that didn't happen. But like a lot of these, a lot of the obviously all the places you go to topographically show. how quickly nature reclaims what it's basically owns already when humans have disappeared for 20 years. And this is something that's been kind of imprinted in us lately with like those History Channel shows where it's like, what does New York City look like after 10 years?
If there are no people.
Yeah. And it's like they really did a nice job of capturing that, I thought. But, you know, I also like that, you know, one of the coolest parts of the game, I thought, was kind of a subdued part of the game where they're going after Robert towards the beginning of the game and they go to that settlement and you start to see the economy of the people that are outside of the quarantine zones. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys explored that little town area where like the guy's selling rats like to eat. Another dude is like selling dogs and you go up to him and he's like, all these dogs are spoken for, like come back next week.
And you can hear people like, oh my God, you have rats. Like give me one. Like they're excited to eat a rat.
Yeah, I like that he's like, come back next week, we'll have new dogs. Like that's not really how the apocalypse works. how dogs work.
Maybe he's getting, who knows. And they have like a fight club kind of thing going on where they're taking bets on fights, whatever. And this is also the scene where you really start to see how crazy and badass Tess is, because Tess confronts that guy who's like one of the bodyguards, shoots him right in his face. This is the first time you get into combat in the game, and it's cool because it teaches you, even though you know everything about this game as being very sneaky and very stealthy and you're making things, whatever, it teaches you gunplay first. And I think that is actually kind of cool, was that like, we'll teach you how to use guns first, and by the way, this isn't really that important, you know, because you're not going to be using them that much if you're playing the
games. I mean, Naughty Dog is fantastic at that, though. Like with Uncharted 3, like you're at a bar and something breaks out, and all of a sudden, I'm learning combat, but I'm in a cutscene, and it's they're really, really good with stuff like that. So I really appreciated that with this game too, and like that it does do that. It goes, oh yeah, you can shoot people in this game, but you mostly won't.
Yeah,
like, a few minutes later, you're like, I have six bullets.
The combat says so much about everything going on in this game, like especially with Joel. Like we keep coming back to like Joel's the bad guy, but I think combat speaks to that more than anything else, because I mean, you have Joel whose superpower is to sit down and listen for the enemy. That's also what the clickers do. Yeah. So there's that analog there. Mm-hmm. But the entire time, what stuck out as most interesting to me in combat is that in most scenarios with humans, 99% of the time when you encounter people, you have to kill them.
Yeah.
99% of the time when you encounter clickers, you don't have to kill them. So you can leave the dead things alive, and you most of the time have to kill the things who are alive.
Yeah,
and
that
actually, just kind of speaks to who Joel is.
The first 2 hours I played the game, I was like, I'm not going to shoot anyone. I'm not going to shank anybody. I'm going to sneak past them, or I'm going to strangle them.
Yep.
But you get in a couple situations where it's just like, oh, I'm killing you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you can't be a good guy in this world. There's nothing you can do to be like, I'm going to do a perfect playthrough. Like, there's games you can play as just a stealth guy. Yeah, you have to, there's just things you have to do.
And there was I really felt, I was talking to Greg about this when Greg and I were the only ones that had the game. I don't want to spoil anything for anyone when we had it at that time. And I told Greg that one of the things that really resonated with me about the combat was that I felt like real palpable disappointment when I was seen. Like I wanted, not because I couldn't protect myself, but you can handle yourself. Playing the game on normal is really not that hard. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, I wanted to get through areas without being seen, and it was always disappointing when you're seen. And I think the game is somewhat forgiving in the sense that one of the immersion problems people have with the game, which I think is one of the game's only true flaws that you kind of overlook because the game's just so good and it tells you such a riveting story and it's so fun to play, is the fact that they kind of let you out when your AI character is seen by someone else. They don't count that.
Yeah, that happens and a lot.
And I know that people are disappointed in that, but like, there's only two ways around that specific problem. It's either you let Ellie or whoever you're with blow your cover all the time, which would piss you off and probably make the game much less fun to play, or you have a vapid or non-existent.
You stay here, Ellie. I'm gonna go clean it up.
Or like a Resident Evil 5 style, like useless AI character.
Actually, no. It's funny you say that, because Resident Evil 4 had an amazing bit like that, where you could basically
stay
be
here.
Like, wait, hide
okay,
in this.
Come on.
Stay behind here. I'm gonna go clear this area out and make it safe for you. And I was actually kind of surprised that there was no. All your interaction with her was scripted. There was nothing like, hey, Ellie, wait behind. I have to go kill these five people. I don't want you to see this. I don't want you standing in the middle being like, hey, look what I found. And just being like, just stay. Just relax for a minute. Or, all right, come on. You can come now. It's clear.
But isn't part of that that you want, like, her whole character is that, you know, we talked about this in the Beyond when somebody said that she was naive. And we're like, no, she's not. Like, she's totally raised in this world. She understands the violence and what's happening. And she does have those moments of, hey. Whole brick to the head.
And in an ideal, perfect gameplay world, then yes, all of that would be fleshed out.
Sure.
But there were times where you're like, all right, I'm hiding. And she'd be like, me too! And run behind you, and four people would be like,
right,
and not do anything to you.
See, that for me, I didn't like Resident Evil 4. It's like, wait here, do this. It's like, you are a nuisance, and I don't enjoy playing with you. Like, get in the dumpster, and I will come back for you in 30 minutes.
I will say that the smart thing about that is that if anybody ever writes lists of the best escort missions in games,
who does
write it down, Brian?
The Last of Us won't be in there because it never really felt like that. Like, right. It always just felt like this is an extension of my character.
The only thing we talked about being a breaking of, exactly, like, wait, exactly, a second, we've been together a year and I haven't taught you to swim?
Yeah, right? You don't have school, you don't have to go to work, you don't have to do anything. You just hang out with me. We hang out in your bodies of water all the time. I put you on these shipping pallets and
drag
you
around.
Which don't float. And she can't swim. And a year later, it's like season after season. And I get winter because that's cold. But season after season, it's like Ellie can't swim.
It didn't get to me until the final one and the lead up to the hospital where she's like, can you get the paddle? I'm like, wait a second.
Like, come on.
Like, what have we been
doing? The only thing you have to do.
Kick your legs.
I told Brian, I was like, I would understand it if she was like, it's a phobia where she has this irrational fear. She's right. Like, I can't. But it's like, she's like, no, I never really learned.
Yeah.
Can learn.
Yeah. Like, I'm not really into that. I made a Molotov, though. Is that what kids do? I don't know. It's crazy.
That kind of never really bothered me. I mean, considering we don't know what they went through in between those times where we see them, you know, like together, because there's all of this 99% of their time together we don't see. You know, you don't really. And if it's anything like the times we do see, there's not a lot of time for swimming lessons. You know what I mean? Like they're
in trouble. Except for all the times when you get to the water and just hang out in the water.
Yeah, you're
for
going as long as you want. You're trying to go somewhere. I mean, you don't know. Like,
there's 15 minutes, Colin. She's an adult.
Your watch is broken. You have no concept of time. You literally have no concept of time other than it's light, it's dark. We should sleep or we should walk. And part of the walking stuff should involve swimming.
Fair. So what do we think about the specific scene, really one of the most powerful scenes in the game, when it looks like Joel's dead? Because when they're at the school and Joel falls onto onto the skewer, as it were, and I could have sworn at that point that Joel was going to die.
Me too.
Was convinced he was dead, right? Because he falls on it, and it's like, that's a gaping wound. He is bleeding everywhere. This is not good. It cuts to Winter, and Ellie is alone. And I was like, oh my God, they did it. And I was almost a little bit disappointed when she has the voice crack and it's like, antibiotics, give me antibiotics, I need medicine. I was like, Joel's alive.
Yeah, it was total classic video game or movie these days where he fell, got skewered, and I'm like, oh, he's not dead. I've seen trailers where in outfits I haven't seen yet.
Right.
And so then, sure enough, I was like, when it happened and I started playing as Ellie, I was like, this would have been fucking awesome if I just kept on going as her. I really would have dug that.
But that's what I was hoping.
I really thought that's what happened too. And I thought that the scene between, like, you see the monkeys, there's that whole fight in, by the way, the college dorms in that game looked like real college dorms.
Yeah, it was really
hadn't been hit by the apocalypse yet. They were just like, oh, messy potheads live here. It's like a hungry man on the floor. There's a monkey. There's a bong and all these 420 posters and stuff like that. So you see all that happen, and then he falls, pole goes through him, and then she's in the snow tracking the blood, and I thought that 10 minutes right there was like 10 of my favorite minutes in anything in the history of this medium. Like, it was just so cool just tracking that deer and just going from like, hey, we're together, we're bros for life, to, oh my God, I'm all alone, it's completely desolate, it's cold, and now I'm murdering things on my own. We're brilliant. I really thought that was it for him.
Yeah, you know? I did too, and I was kind of hoping, I thought it was too. It was like, we talk about in Uncharted, and especially in Uncharted 3, there's a moment where you think Sullivan's dead, right? And like, he's not. And like, that was their chance to do it. Like, that was their chance to like make a bold decision.
Yeah.
And I thought that this was kind of Naughty Dog's way of saying, like, we're gonna make that decision now by killing the protagonist of our new series halfway through the first game. There's going to be more Last of Us games.
Yeah.
So you know, but they didn't, and that was fine.
Well, they didn't because it's a video game at the end of the day, and the weird part is like, part of me was sitting there going, oh man, I just leveled up your shotgun. Instead of like, oh man, the loss of life. I was like, well, I made it so you can hear farther. You should stay alive. I could have used those points on health.
And that was one of the cool things too that Greg pointed out. I didn't notice it on my first playthrough, was that if you look at Ellie, like, 'cause I immediately went to Ellie's stats. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, did they carry over somehow? They didn't.
She and can like craft like half the things.
Yeah. And that's really cool. And that she has her own stuff in her backpack.
Yeah,
which is cool.
She had that blade that was basically just, it came with her.
Yeah, well, but when you open her bag, she has a note from her mom. Her mom wrote her this letter that you can go and you read it, and you're talking about interactable things. You read it and you flip it over, and it's like, make me proud. And Ellie goes, I'm trying, mom, every day, or something like that. And she's got like the toy totally she tried that. To give, what's his face? Henry? No, Sam.
Sam. Bootleg Joe Bob.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she's like, I was so stupid.
Was that guy's dad was kind of a dick, by the way.
It was his brother.
It was his brother. It was like, he's like, can I just? No.
Yeah.
You can't have that. Also, I thought it was funny that when you go in the toy store,
Jack and Daxter the board game,
and Uncharted the board game, still on the shelves, covered in dust. Even the apocalypse.
Just like
people are not. Just like Uncharted they would, board game. Jeez, I wouldn't play that if it was the end of the world.
Then what was it? It was Panda Adventure too.
Yeah.
Like, is there a next game? And while we're on Easter eggs, I loved the stuffed animals. They had a stuffed Jack and Daxter on the dresser,
really
and then
cool.
a Nathan Drake in the bed. I was like, that's.
They
cool.
were really cool. They were almost like Sackboy-ish. They
were
kind
of
like,
Yeah, so we didn't touch on this these other characters, Sam and
Henry.
They kind of pissed me off a little bit. I think that scene, like, in a sense, like they were fine, but as like a person, like experiencing Joel's and Ellie's story, like that betrayal specifically when
they don't help
them.
You. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was really mad that like
that they were so okay with it later.
Yeah, like that. Like Joel takes the vengeful route every time, right? Except for there, when like it most seriously affected him.
But I agreed with that decision. Like, you know what I mean? Like especially when he's like, he gets the punch in. And he's like, "What would you have done with her?" And it's like, "Yep, I would have totally cut and run." And you guys, I don't know at all.
Like, and at the same time, they still realize like, "We can still help each other." Like, that was a fucked up thing you did, but we still need each other.
They only knew each other for a few hours.
Sure,
and it was sort of like. The guy, they kind of cut and ran at the first chance they got. Like, they're like, help us on this truck. Nope. And they ran off. And it's like, well, those guys were dicks.
Well,
what do we expect?
The machine gun tank thing coming down. There's no, how are you going to get him, too? There's no, hold my legs, little brother. No, you're going to fall over, too. You'll be screwed.
And what do you think about the other major plot point we ignored was the dam and how Joel's brother is still alive.
Yeah.
And that character kind of transcends the intro when he's really protecting Sarah and Joel all the way to this point, and is still alive at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that whole thing? Do you think that like then they're back at that point in Colorado at the end of the game? So do you think that he's going to play into a possible sequel? Do you think that that character and those guys are somehow important to the story?
I thought it was very important that they did not kill Tommy, not for like sequel purposes or anything, but because as soon as I arrived at the dam and I was like, oh, Tommy's going to be here, and as soon as I met him and his wife, I thought, okay, well. This is where it does the thing that all video games and apocalypse things do, where it's like, hope you don't like these people, because we're going to kill them.
Yeah.
And they don't. Like, that's the one time in the game where you're thinking they're dead and they don't die. Everywhere else, you're absolutely convinced everyone's going to die, and they do.
I didn't know they were going to kill the shit out of that horse.
Man.
Because they killed the shit out of that horse.
Yes, they did.
Like, he did, like, 8 flips and landed on his neck.
His brains exploded all over the
screen. It was
gross.
Oh, it was really bad. Because they're like, shoot the horse!
Don't shoot the horse! These guys have terrible aim during that scene. It's like,
they were stormtroopers.
Yep.
I was really surprised Joel and Ellie didn't die. One of them. I thought one of them would die by the time credits rolled.
And that's what I was saying when everyone was getting upset, especially in IGN comments, about like, oh, these spoilers and stuff. Like, none of these spoilers are real.
Yeah, none of those are real.
Yeah, like, that was what was so frustrating.
What were they? Because I remember something about R.I.P. Ellie being one
of them,
right?
Of them was that Ellie, like, so some of them were half true. Like, Ellie is infected at the beginning of the game. Well, Ellie is already infected at the beginning of the game. You don't see her get infected.
Accidentally read the art book and saw that spoiler.
That was one, we talked about this on Beyond, right, of the fact that a lot of these spoilers weren't true. And I said, well, part of them is, but... We've been predicting that since the first, like, or second rewind.
Little girl, right.
The first time I got to play it, as soon as they get out of the quarantine zone, Tess and Joel have this conversation. Well, what if it's real this time? I want to believe. And it's like, well
people.
No, I wonder why we're carrying this girl around.
People have conditioned themselves to think that, like, you can't get emotional over something unless it's the worst thing that could possibly happen. Yeah. Like, I tweeted the other day that I choked up playing the game, and a bunch of people tweeted at me, and they're like, you, man, now I know somebody dies.
Nope.
I'm like, no, maybe there's just a giraffe. Like, you can never predict that.
I think it's good. I think the most surprising thing about the game is that neither of them do die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's
almost more powerful that they survive for Joel to lie to her face.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it sets it up perfectly for a sequel, because I understand Neil Druckmann doesn't want to do a sequel to the game, or at least they're on the record as saying that he said he wouldn't mind. Yeah, like if they left it alone or whatever, but there's no way the way this game is purportedly selling, it's like sold out in like every store, that Sony's not like, we are doing a sequel and it's in pre-production right
they've
at
this
the
very
Vita, second.
They've got the Vita prequel, the card game.
Oh my God, did you imagine they put the Uncharted route? That would be cool to put a Last of Us.
Maybe it's the Uncharted board game from the story.
They'll almost definitely move away from those characters, I think. Even in DLC.
That's what I was saying.
I hope they don't. I hope what ends up happening is that you end up playing as Ellie in this.
I would love to jump ahead. I would love, another 10-year jump.
The thing is that then you're getting into, like, I don't want to, like, because she's, you know, like, that scene in the snow when she's hunting the deer is like very Tomb Raider-like, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're playing as a female character, an archer, a very strong woman or a girl at that time, whatever. I don't want, like, they're probably a little wary of doing that specifically because of how it might compare to the Tomb Raider reboot in some sense, where it's like the strong female.
Oh, the one that ripped off Uncharted, you mean?
Well,
after Uncharted ripped off Tomb
Raider? Yeah, I was gonna say Uncharted.
They're back and forth bad now, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, there's it's a post-apocalyptic as opposed to being an archaeologist, of course.
I wonder if the Battlefield guys are like, I hope there's no gritty first-person shooters coming out this year.
I would have loved to have seen the Naughty Dog's reaction to when the first demo of Tomb Raider and she gets impaled on that spike.
Like, mother!
Like, damn it, we had that.
So, and we're just kicking out the window in the beginning.
I want to be at E3 like 2 or 3 years from now, and they're like, we have one more title to announce, and you just see Joel and Ellie, and they're years older, and they're running around the woods, and it says they kill someone, and it says The Last of Us. Yeah.
See, that's going to piss me off so much. There's already so many jokes about, The Last or whatever, you know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't mean they're the last.
This is the last, I know, right?
And nobody wants to get that. They all want to be a bunch of dicks on the internet like they always are.
Yeah, I mean, kind of the inevitability of the whole situation is that people are procreating. Obviously, Ellie was born after the fall of society or whatever, but eventually the humanity will whittle down to nothing. I mean, that is kind of the unspoken thing in this game. They're not going to recover unless the Fireflies figure out a way to resist and make this cure, which is obviously aborted at the end. Is there anything else left unsaid, or should we get into questions?
I'm sure we're going to get into stuff in the questions there. Remember, if you want to be part of the show, beyond@IGN.com.
So some of this we might have gone over, but let's just go over it again. I'm just going to read them. I haven't read. We'll see where it brings us.
Going blind.
Neil Gabriel.
Like a clicker.
Hi, Neil.
Neil says, shit, bro. The Last of Us has options for no gore and things like that. Did you try playing the game with that option to see how it looked? I think that having that option is a great way to try and make the game more available to somewhat younger audience, but there's still violence.
What?
Younger audience, the shit that is wrong with this game that will make you sad and offended is not the fucking blood.
I
didn't read it as this is in there for a younger audience. I read it as this is in there for the people who were all crybabies after Last E3. Last E3 that ended, the demo ends with the shotgun to the head, and so many people were up in arms of how violent
the industry was. I mean, it wasn't just that. There was a lot of like really gross stuff.
What do you do now? You throw a pie in his face? I mean, this is...
No. Well, his head just doesn't deteriorate into a
bloodness. I like my gritty post-apocalyptic virus outbreak worlds to be G-rated, sir.
Well, here's the thing about like the violence. I feel like in this game, if you turn it off, sure, you don't have the violence, but everything else is still really fucked up. But I feel like the violence in this game has a lot to say.
Yeah.
It contributes a lot to the idea that this is a really bleak, disgusting world.
Mm-hmm. Like,
if Joel has someone with a gun to their head and shoots them in the face, he is covered in blood for, like, the foreseeable future. Like, you see the ramifications in the world of what you've done. You see dudes who are, like, just gaping wounds.
What happens if when the thing goes through his chest? Does he land on a trampoline?
I don't think it's that drastic, Brian.
You can take the blood out, but you'd be like, dude, that's weird. You have a pole through you and you're not bleeding.
He lands on a trampoline.
He leans up against the wall and the blood
screams. Omi asks specifically for Greg. He said, Greg, in an early episode of Podcast Beyond, you mentioned that someone at Naughty Dog clued you in on a few details you missed. What were they?
It was the backpack that I then passed on to you I never looked in the backpack because it was Neil Druckmann. I beat it. I was talking to him about it. He's like, did you look in the backpack?
Ellie's.
When you take over as Ellie for the first time, like I looked in there and I saw I couldn't do all the Molotovs. He's like, no, the actual items. So I went back and looked through stuff like
that's
that.
Awesome.
I'm sure there was other things.
That's really cool.
The biggest one.
That is cool. I want to get the platinum. I'm worrying about the multiplayer trophies right now. By the way, multiplayer is really, really good.
It's awesome. Connect it to your Facebook.
We discussed this a little bit, but I'm sorry.
Before we piggyback off, can we talk about that a little bit? Platinum pace and stuff like that?
Sure.
We talked about this when our initial no spoilers part on
this
Beyond.
This is where you and I just tune out.
No. This you're in part of this because you got involved on the internet, on the Twitter there about it.
Did I? Yeah. I already forgot.
What it was
sorry, where?
I love The Last of Us. I don't plan on platinuming it. Mm-hmm. When we played through the game, I never looked at the trophy list. And once I was done with it and I went and looked at it, like, I'm still not... I don't want to do that to this game. I feel like that cheapens what this is to me in a way.
Yeah,
because, like, usually what I would do is finish it and then finish... Like, Uncharted, right? I'd finish it. But Uncharted is such a game.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for me, this was more of an experience.
Yeah, I'm told the trophies are kind of hard to get in this game.
There's also not that many.
You have to play it a lot, and then, there's a lot of...
Because I played through it once. I got no trophies until the very end when I had tears in my eyes, and it was like, boop!
You can shut that off now at the new firmware.
If the firmware is not bad.
The firmware, my system's already bricked when I go home.
but that yanked me out of the experience more than anything because I was that's right, it's a video game.
It's fine, the credits were rolling, you were done.
Yeah.
But I kept comparing it to Journey and Walking Dead, right? Because when those games came out, we talked about like you played Journey once and that was your playthrough. And a lot of people played Walking Dead once and that was their playthrough. Yeah. And if I had not reviewed Walking Dead, that's how I would have done it too. But for this is the same thing to me, even though the story is very, it's linear, you know what I mean? I'm going to get the same point, part of that, what was so awesome about my Last of Us playthrough was not knowing the giraffe was around the corner and not knowing what was going to happen exactly with David and like what's going to happen with these two brothers I'm with all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, I had the same thing with Heavy Rain where I finished it and I was like, well, these guys are alive, these guys aren't. And then you did an article which fascinated me, which is all the different endings and all the different ways it could go. And I was like, wow, Greg actually had to go and play all of that, which means that when he thinks of that game, his experience is like, it's fractured off into like 15 different places. And for me, it's just like, that's who made it, that's who didn't.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally playing online right now. I think it's fun. I will platinum it. Yeah, the online's really, really fun. Matt asks, and we talked about this a little bit, but we can kind of just maybe make a guess, like a specific guess. What do you think the story DLC will cover? Joel and Ellie's story was resolved, but maybe ND, Naughty Dog, could show us the events that led up to Joel and Tommy separating, or even Joel just doing his, quote, job, smuggling, killing innocent people and
no
stuff.
Prequels.
Let's just go around. If you could, Greg, we'll start with you. If you could guess specifically what they're going to show in this DLC, what would it be?
If I'm making the guess I think will actually happen, it'll be more Joel and Ellie, and San Francisco is actually a good thing. Like, if they have extra environments or whatever, I don't think they're going to go through and, like we were talking about, different characters or this, that, or the other would tell Ishmael's story. I would love to see Ish's story, but I sincerely doubt they have the time, desire to sink that much in when they already have these resources ready to go.
So that's my thing with like this and Bioshock Infinite. Both of them, I think, man, I would love to see totally other characters, but are they going to really like recast a new lead, or recast a new AI member? Because there's no way they're getting rid of that AI system because it's too good.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So are they going to redo it from the ground up?
Go back in like, for 3 or 4 hours of gameplay.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So I would like to see new people, but maybe they repurpose it. Maybe you do Sam and Henry because they're a duo. And
that's a good point.
Yeah. I like the dog idea, but I want to see Crazy Dave's cannibal restaurant, like Diner Dash style, and people are coming in, he's like, eat a dick.
Here at Crazy Dave's cannibal restaurant, when we say eat a dick, we mean it.
If I was going to bet...
Left at the gasoline shop.
If I was going to bet, I would say that we're going to see...
Kids eat free.
We're going to see Joel and his brother right after the fall.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe, who knows? Because we know that they had some sort of association with the Fireflies earlier.
Mm-hmm. Or Marlene and Ellie.
Yeah, sure. That'd be great too. There's a lot of opportunities. I'm sure it'll be nothing that we guessed.
Correct.
Let's do one more from our friend M-Dog.
What up, M-Dog?
I trust him implicitly.
Me too. He says, we talked about this before, but we can elaborate on it a little bit. Do you think that Ellie believed Joel when he said that he had been truthful about the Fireflies? My friend and I discussed it, and her response, a very weak, perhaps doubtful, okay. Ellie's.
Look at M-Dog talking to girls.
I think he's talking about Ellie.
Oh, damn.
Seemed to show otherwise. Another question. If you were put in Joel's shoes, would you have aborted Ellie's surgery, thus ruining all hope for a cure or let it proceed? I found it ridiculous that Joel made that choice, but after reading other people's interpretation of his decision, I don't think that a cure could have saved mankind at this point anyway.
We all killed the doctor, so I think we would
have. Yeah. You have to. I mean, you have to kill the doctor.
Yeah, no. If I could have not killed the doctor, I would have not. If I could have surrendered right there, I would have surrendered.
I didn't let him go at me. I didn't know that he went after you, but like I held my gun there for like 5 seconds, and I'm like, well...
Eventually, he picks up a scalpel and turns to you, and I'm like, "Well, you're raising arms."
So I love the way it ended. We all talked about that. I think if they do a sequel with these characters, the most like pivotally emotional moment in it will be when she confronts him about it, and he's just like,
"Oh God, please no!" That's just like robbing everything about that ending.
Exactly. This is what I don't want, and this is why some people should just be happy with this is how it ended, and that's fine, and just walk away, and you don't get like answers to everything. And sometimes you just walk away from a conversation and that was the last conversation you ever had about it. And that's it. And I think that's the way it should be. I don't want it to be like, hey, did you lie about the ending of that last game? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, I'm mad at you. And pounds on
you
his chest. And he's like, I lost a daughter. Look at the watch. And it just, it steals everything that made this so powerful to me. So I'm really hoping that that doesn't happen.
If they do the sequel and they keep these characters and they don't go off it with different people or whatever, the way I see it happening is never another conversation between them about it. It'll be a third party enters who was a guard.
I was
a guard who got shot or something. Or just he's an urban legend now, right? Like the guy who ruined all of humanity's chains.
Yeah, yeah.
Like people would have talked about this. I'm sure not every Firefly was like, not just gonna be up tonight for no reason at the base, you know what I mean? There's other Fireflies like in camp somewhere that were like part of this, knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, it reminded me of when you read stories about like research facilities that people break into and destroy and wreck years of, and like it's angry vegans or somebody thinks that they're doing animal testing or something like that. And whatever you feel about all that, the result is that somebody was working on something for so long and then it stopped and then it was destroyed and it was ended. So afterwards, they're just like, got to start from scratch.
Yeah.
So that's where society is, and if they want to trace that back to he's the guy, and there's this man running around the world that ruined the world for everybody. And spoilers, he's with the girl that they could have saved the world. Like, they're a pretty easy target to find because it's them and a couple other people who are eating people, and then clickers and bloaters, and that's and a giraffe. That's a society. Actually, side note, I was really happy when they sort of stopped the monster closet with bloater. And it wasn't just like, here's a this thing. And
we got a puker and a flyer.
And it's just like, a guy comes in with wings. He's like, I'm infected. Scrum. I'm glad they didn't do any of that.
Yeah,
when you have that first fight against the bloater, it feels really special. And then they only happen a few more times throughout the game.
Yeah. You can ignore mostly, a fight with one entirely if you're just like, God, open the fucking door.
Yeah, you can mostly just get around them. And he's just standing there and he's like, and you're like, but I'm glad that they didn't turn it into a whole like, here's the species. We're working on an action figure line.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that would have totally destroyed it for me.
Yeah, it was tasteful, I thought.
Yeah.
Anything else left unsaid, Greg?
I like this game.
Yeah,
it was really good.
Yeah, I think it's like I said in the review. I think it's PlayStation 3's best exclusive, and of course, I don't say best game because it's in the conversation. I think for like best game I played this generation, like no doubt about it.
Oh yeah.
But we're bringing in Red Dead and Fallout 3 and games that are like really, and this game is in that class.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But I think as far as the exclusive offerings on PS3, as good as many of them are,
Will be my IGN Game of the Year pick, assuming nothing completely out of nowhere comes this fall that shocks the out of me.
But yeah, I mean,
this is the game to beat for me right now. And I was saying on Beyond yesterday, which you guys should listen to.
Every Tuesday on IGN.com and iTunes, the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet.
you got that down.
Yeah, I say it quite a bit.
This is like the PlayStation's Ocarina of Time to me, which is a weird thing to say because it's like they are stylistically completely different.
But the most like meaningful end of the console. Like here's like our magnum opus.
This is the thing that defines this generation for me. This is the one that as years go by, I'll probably like once every year or so, I will play it again.
Yeah. So this one's going to be re-released to death on every PlayStation platform and handheld.
It'll be on Vita 2.
Hey, I mean, if they want to put this out in a few years with new PS4 textures, yes, I will play it.
Yeah,
like I have no problem with that. That'd if they want to do an HD remaster,
it's already beautiful.
Game,
yeah.
So
cool, Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, when I finished this game, I thought, you know what, that was a one and done experience. I don't really need to replay it. Don't really care about multiplayer. Still playing multiplayer. I've started my new game on hard. I can't get enough, and I, at a certain point, thought in fall, maybe a little bit too much combat. I don't know how I feel about this. I feel like it's falling back on guns too much, but even then, like, the combat is so excellent that at a certain point I stopped caring, even if I did feel like some of it was padded. Right. Love it.
Altana, closing thoughts?
I hope she learns to swim. That would be nice. No, like, I mean, it's everything I just said. It's a fantastic game. The fact that we can all sit here and not... We're not debating over like really dumb
was
things.
Was it really
about
a 10, Colin?
I wish you had more inventory items. Like, like that was a fucking incredible experience that I never would have thought growing up, like playing Zelda and Mario on my NES, that this is where we'd be right now. But this is where we are. And we're getting closer and closer to kind of intruding on territories of books and movies where people can really start taking this medium seriously. And yeah, it's full of murder, but so is everything else.
Yeah.
And I've never experienced anything like it in a game, and I just want more.
Cool, fair enough. I agree. Excellent game. Buy it, play it, enjoy it. Thank you for joining us on this special spoiler cast for The Last of Us, branded Podcast Beyond, as you can see. As Greg said, come listen to Podcast Beyond on IGN or iTunes. Every Tuesday we have a new episode. Episode 300 is coming up soon, Greg.
Yeah, so really exciting. Live event.
All right, until next time, Beyond.
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 Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.